Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
The Bruins move into first place, 1 point ahead of Florida. The Panthers have a game in hand, but Boston hangs on to win over Philly 6-5 the hard way.
Welcome into Sunday Skate. Happy St. Patrick's Day, everyone.
Happy St. Patrick's Day to you.
In fitting fashion, my head is spinning after that third period last night.
Oh, I thought you were going to say after you had too many Irish coffees this morning.
Nope.
Not yet?
Didn't start in on that yet. Okay. No, that's for after the show.
Maybe later.
gotta be professional, Bridget. So Bruins Flyers Saturday night, enter the third period, tie 2-2. Bruins score three goals in the first 4:04. They're up 5-2. Easy sailing. Nope, not with this Bruins team. They let Philly get back in it. Flyers cut it to 5-4. Then the Bruins go up 6-4. 55 seconds later, 6-5. They hold on for the win, though. So 6-5 win over the Flyers. They move back on top of the NHL standings. They're a point ahead of the Florida Panthers for the best record in the league. But how do you guys feel coming out of that one? Because on the one hand, hey, you got the win against a desperate team that's trying to cling to a playoff spot. On the other, this Bruins team continues to struggle to close out games. They continue to make things hard on themselves. They get pinned in. They give up too many chances. So we feeling good, bad, somewhere in between? Where are you guys at?
Are you looking at me to go first?
Yeah.
Okay. Because I actually think I know Razor's answer. I actually don't feel that bad. I
was hoping you would say that. I had a sense you would say that.
Yeah.
That's why I was letting you go.
I don't think, I mean, I'll be honest with you, it was an entertaining game. I didn't mind watching it. It had me on the edge of my seat at the end when maybe it shouldn't have. And I guess that's really the problem, but I enjoyed watching it. And they did find a way to close it out. I want to get Razor's opinion on some things, especially to do with goaltending, because there were so many goals given up. I'm sure you have some opinions on which ones maybe should have been stopped, which ones were maybe impossible. I thought maybe there was a little bit of goaltender interference that could have been challenged on one of them that I'll get to as well. But I'm encouraged by the fact that they were able to score as much as they did, right? The silver lining is that the Bruins gave up a few goals in that third, which the floodgates really opened in the third. But they also were able to score themselves quite a bit and get it from throughout the lineup. Charlie Coyle had a great game. Jake DeBrusk had a great game. So you can look at individual efforts that were promising. Hampus Lindholm had another great game, and we got another chance to see Andrew Peak. So just as a pure hockey fan, it was fun to watch. And yeah, so I'm not super discouraged by it. I'm pretty sure I know Razor's.
I had a different feel. I'm not discouraged in any. I'm not going to be discouraged about anything, right? Because it doesn't matter until the playoffs anyways. You could look at the other way that, again, they get more reps doing this. There's a couple things that while I watched that last night, I wish just a few plays would be done differently. But the overall, that didn't feel like Vancouver to me last night. It didn't feel like some of the other two goal leads that they had, where it felt like they did, like Montgomery said last night, they took the foot off the gas. They were in St. Patrick's Day mode already, rather than, I think, like the Vancouver one, you could tell they were grinding and couldn't do it. They were trying their hardest and they couldn't pull it off. This one felt like a little bit of a lapse of judgment. Give credit to Philadelphia. They probably should have been done. They should have been ready to mail it in, and they didn't. And that's a credit to that team and that coaching staff and the reason why they're hanging on by their fingernails, third in the Metropolitan, because they're not a very good hockey team. They do not have many good players, especially on the back end. They're goaltending suspect, and they're hanging around because of that effort that you saw at the end. So give them a little bit of credit. We could give the Bruins a hard time about letting their foot off the gas, but I don't lump that one in. And like Jake DeBrus said after the game in the room, you know, we got six goals and we got out of it. That's kind of the way I looked at it. It was fun. Like Bridget said, everyone should be happy. Let's not dwell on that one last night. Wasn't one to dwell about their lead losses. You're going to see a few of these because the teams are desperate. The league's really hard to defend. We see that. You can't take penalties. You can't hold guys up. Power plays happen, and then all of a sudden, three-goal leads evaporate. It happened to Tampa. Like, it just happens to most teams on a nightly basis.
Usually you win a game that you score six goals in, too.
Well, yeah, that's it. Like, exactly. Like, was Philly really going to get four in the last 4 minutes? Like, that, it does get hard to do. And if they only need the Heinen one. Like, I think they win 5-4 even if Heinen doesn't score, or that goes a little further and they score an empty net or whatever. Wait, hindsight, or I guess we just made it up. I just made it up. My question is back to you guys, and this is my issue with it. I wish they would ice the puck. They make too many 5-foot passes on a 6-on-5 down below the goal line. So that, I'd love for you guys to run with that, because that's the only thing I saw last night. Again, it happens. And I think that's a little bit of a process of trying to take their foot off the gas. Maybe because it's Philadelphia, they want to make a play. But I wish they would take it and wrap it as hard as they could around up on the glass. The garden glass bounces all over. It's going to probably end out of the zone. Probably won't even be an icing. That's the only thing that I would critique and wonder why they don't do that more. Hammer it out.
It seems like a strategy thing, right? Like, they want control. They want to be able to get into position for a soft flip or even, you know, get a shot on goal. And you're right. There's times that it totally backfires because it leads to more possession. And I've kind of have had a problem with that all year. I wish they would do what you're saying, just ice it down, take the face off. Even though they've had their problems with face-offs, in the D zone late in games. But for me, so I guess on the plus side, I would say they never got to a tie game. You know, they never fully gave up the lead. So that part is encouraging. The 6-5 goal bothers me. Like, for that to come right after, you know, you give up the two, you let them get back in it. All right, that's one thing. Then Heinen scores, right? Trent Frederick, good shot block. They get going the other way, Heinen with a snipe, and it's like, okay, there you go. That puts the game away, 6-4. As soon as Philly pulls the goalie, they get it to 6-5. Like, that one bothers me because that felt like more the same, where they get into the extra attacker situation and can't hold on. And yeah, and the not just clearing it all the way down is part of that. It is. They do try to get too cute. They try to make possession plays. And, you know, I just feel like you're at a, you know, we're now talking about 13 games left. You're at a point in the season where, yes, it was very entertaining, but I'm not looking for fun and entertaining at this point in the year. I'm looking for professional closeouts to get the win and play the way you need to play to win playoff games.
Well, careful with that, though, because that's what I hear that. Oh, we want to. Well, the results say that they're the best team in the National Hockey League. So we can't do, like, and I'm not saying you're doing it specifically, but I do hear that quite often, where it's like, well, they got to do better. They need result. They need this. And they lose three games. No, it's about results. Well, now we're going to sit here and they're first in the most points in the National Hockey League with 13 games left is the Boston Bruins. So you can't go, well, I don't want to have fun, because people will do that. And again, I know it's not you, Scott, but it is.
But I will say they're not first in the league in wins or regulation wins.
Okay, well, it doesn't matter.
There's no point in the playoffs.
Whoa. No, you can't do that either. That doesn't work either. Let's be serious. That's not fair. That's a joke, right? Like, that's not fair. It's not. Well, we'll go off winning percentage. That's all we can do is winning percentage. So they're second in the league in winning percentage. That's 0.003 points behind the Florida Panthers, who everybody thinks are so amazing. Everybody thinks the Florida Panthers are so amazing around here. The Boston Bruins are 0.003 percentage points behind them. Percentage points is what matters in the National Hockey League. And you can't have it, well, they don't have regulation when you don't. They can't be having fun out there. It's all about the results at this point in the year. Well, the results say they're the second best team in the league if you want to go points percentage. And that should mean something, too. So we can't have it all our separate little ways here.
Yeah, Scott.
They are.
Here he comes. He's going to have some analytics.
One, two, three.
I don't care about regulation because it's not the point. Four, the extra five, point six. Is.
They're seventh in regulation wins.
Doesn't matter. Who cares?
I do.
I know, but it doesn't matter, though, because that's not how the league works.
The regular season, yeah, but in the playoffs, you want to close games out in regulation.
Well, okay, the playoffs don't have shootouts or 3-on-3.
No, but 5-on-5
which is
the
reason why they lost so many times in overtime is because they're terrible at 3-on-3.
I don't like this point either that, well, who cares about overtime in the shootout because you don't have that in the playoffs. Okay, but 5-on-5 overtime in the playoffs can be just as much of a crapshoot.
Of course, but you can't say regulation wins matters only. That's all. That's all I'm saying is that it doesn't matter in the playoffs because the games don't end in regulation in the playoffs either.
My point is just I wish they were better at closing games out in regulation, and they got the regulation win last night. So you know, ultimately mission accomplished. It was just ugly, and there were some of the problems that we've seen that have led to them ending up in overtime too often. Some of those problems are still there. That's my issue.
Yeah, and what you asked earlier about like making the longer clear rather than the shorter pass to try to get the puck out, that happened to them a lot when the goalie was pulled last night. And what they were doing was like they're trying to bounce an indirect short pass off the wall to like from the defenseman to the guy at the point, and then that guy was gonna try to take a shot or something or skate it out. And it wasn't working.
Yeah, and they won faceoffs last night, right? We've complained and given the centers a hard time 6-on-5 and closing out games. Well, they actually won those faceoffs last night, and then they didn't clear because it wasn't a slapper around the board. Like, put it up on the glass. 9 times out of 10 in the NHL, the defenseman on the weak side gets a stick on or gets a hand on it, and then you pressure them right out of the zone that way. So, again, it wasn't beautiful at the end. I'll concede that, but this is and we should hope that this all makes them better at the end too, because they didn't have to worry about this in the playoffs last season. You hope that they're just going to be more comfortable and have it, like realistically, shouldn't we want them to have this happen every single game the rest of the way, so it's really locked in and grinded into them rather than finishing 5-2. And closing out that way. Like, I there might be some of that helps them in the long run.
And they closed out the game in Montreal in overtime, too.
Yeah.
So
that's two in a row closeouts. They closed out Toronto 3-1, 4-1 2 weeks ago. So, everything's okay.
I don't know about that. But I do think there's something to... There's a benefit to playing so many close games. That's different than last year, and I think that's a good thing. I just worry, could it go the other way where because they've kind of let so many leads slip away and had these problems closing out, does that like, get in their head at all? You know, like, do they feel the pressure? Is there a snow, you know, if they're up two goals and they give up one, is there sort of that mental snowball of, here we go again. Like, I think it's good that they're playing these kind of games. I just wish you didn't, you know, every third or fourth time they're in one of these, see these problems come back up where it starts to slip away. They give up a couple quick ones, and now they're holding on for dear life. Like, because we have seen them close out well. Like, the two wins over Toronto, the win over Pittsburgh, those were games where they had really good third periods and closed out strong. But then you get another one like this, and it's like, have they really gotten past, like, how much progress have they made in this respect in terms of holding on to leads in the third period? And that's where I wonder, is there any sort of lingering effect that carries into the playoffs? Like part of me feels like almost no matter who they play, like, I just think, like, they're going to give away a game in the first round. And they might survive. You know, if they're facing Toronto or Detroit or the Islanders or Philly, if they slip down to a wild card spot, I would still pick them to win that series. But then you get to the second round, if you're facing Florida, I don't know if you can get away with giving a game away. Like, that's where I run into a hang-up.
I think we have to open our minds a little bit to the league. This is NHL hockey now, or is giving up these leads. Toronto and Florida, the two teams that we think are pretty good, Toronto and Tampa Bay, two teams we think gave up 3-4-0 leads yesterday. Like, really good hockey teams. Teams that are at the top half of the NHL gave up 3-4-goal leads yesterday as well. So it's just what the league is. It happens every night, and it's going to happen in the playoffs. I agree. It will happen in the playoffs to a couple of teams, and it happened to teams last season in the playoffs. And it's what happens when you have power plays in the playoffs. It's what happens when you have these great players that you can't hook and hold. They're going to find ways to score, and you just have to be able to sustain enough. It just has to be that one goal, that one play, that one empty netter that you find. And I'm fairly confident in saying that guys aren't thinking about it. I'm fairly confident in saying this isn't going to be like a holdover from the playoffs. I think if it happens in the playoffs, it might snowball for a team from game one to game two to game three. But I don't think what happens in these regular seasons is going to be like in their head or something. I don't get the sense that it's in their head over there. I think they sometimes make it too easy. Like, if it was in their head, it would be plays that they're making nervous. They're actually the opposite. They're making plays that get them in trouble that are unnervous, that they're too comfortable. And instead of throwing the puck away, they hold on to it. I am sticking my nose way out here. I get it, because I know if they blow it in the first game of game one, a 3-goal lead, I'm going to get the finger pointed at me instantly. I just don't think that's going to be how it works. And I do think that there are going to be a bunch of games that they come back in too. If they go on a long run, you're going to have to win two or three games that you were down 3-0. And you're going to look back, wow, that was amazing. What a great job by you. But really, maybe it was the other team blowing the lead. It's just hard to hold leads in the NHL.
All right, we're off and running here on St. Patrick's Day, Sunday skate. Lots more on last night's game. The week that was, we've seen Andrew Peak come into the lineup, get some thoughts on the defense.
Johnny Beecher is back.
Evolving thoughts on the goalie situation, now a week removed, week plus from the trade deadline.
I have a Bruin St. Patrick's Day trivia question for you guys.
All right.
So
I'm
excited. I would love
for that.
To know what the rotation would be after the last four games. Where are we at on the rotation of the last four games? That would be interesting.
Join in. 617-779-7937. Text us 37937. Bridget, as you're trending, and we'll be back after that.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
You're listening to Sunday Skate on WEEI.
Keep the rotation till the end. Would you be able to then, you know, ride one guy come playoffs, or would that, would you be maybe more inclined to keep the rotation at that point?
You know, I don't have a definitive answer on that. You know, like, you might go 2 games in a row with one goalie if we keep doing it, and, you know, rotate after that. Just when you start winning in the playoffs, it makes it harder to switch lineup and goaltenders. And, you know, but that's something that we have to discuss internally. And we know if you go with a platoon the whole year, switching in, switching out, you can't expect one guy to ride the emotions of the playoffs by themselves.
Welcome back to Sunday Skate. That was Jim Montgomery on Thursday up in Montreal. We all have some thoughts from our trip to Montreal, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
What a wild little 3-day road trip that was.
But I thought that was a pretty notable answer from Montgomery, because I think as we talk about how you handle goalies down the stretch and into the playoffs and what the Bruins are going to do, I think he kind of ruled out one thing, and I think he basically ruled out what they did last year, which was, for people who might not remember, last season they rotated right to the end of the regular season, back and forth, Allmark, Swayman. And then they tried to ride Allmark for the entire first round and obviously didn't quite get there. They went to Swayman in Game 7. But that comment from Montgomery at the end there about, you know, if you go back and forth all season, you can't expect one guy to handle all the emotions of the playoffs by himself, sort of made me think, like, if this rotation is going to go to the end of the regular season, they're going to plan on using both in the playoffs. Whether that's as a strict rotation or kind of what Montgomery referenced there, like 2 on, maybe 3 in a row, and then go to the other guy. I would think if they're going to ride one guy, I would think, like, you're going to have to end the rotation at some point before the end of the regular season and get someone ready with 3 or 4 starts in a row. Razor, Howard, you have any developing thoughts on how they're going to handle the goalies here?
I think that their play can make it difficult at times. I think they might have wanted to do that last season. And don't forget, Linus Ullmark won the Vezina last year, but Jeremy Swayman basically had a shutout every game the last 5 games of last regular season. And there was no real way to, like, put him on the bench the way he was playing, which, so maybe they wanted to do this last season. Maybe they wanted to go with three games in a row, but Jeremy Swayman's play didn't allow it, and they knew they had to go to Ullmark in game one. And the way they started the series, they couldn't get Swayman in. And it's, you could say it's shaping up that way right now, because maybe 4 games ago, they wanted to run Swayman this week after the deadline. Okay, we get through all the deadline, they want to run Swayman. But then Linus Ullmark goes 1-on-40, and then they put Swayman in. He gives up 5 goals, and then they go back to Linus Ullmark, and he gets a 2-1 win in overtime, and then Jeremy Swayman gives up 5 goals again. So now who's playing game 5? Who's playing game 5? We go back to Linus Ullmark for next game, right? Linus Ullmark's playing the next game of the regular season against the Ottawa Senators, and then Jeremy Swayman's got the Rangers. So let's say if they did want to play Swayman and get him ready at this point, it's hard to do that because Ullmark's playing so well. And that's the other thing that's come up with this goalie thing the last couple of years, is that one of them's always playing really well and the other one's playing pretty good. And that's what makes it hard. Not like no one's been so bad for 3 straight games where you could say, okay, we just got to give you a week off to really do goalie work, and we're going to run with this other guy. It's actually crazy that it hasn't happened, and it really should be marveled at how consistent both of them have been for over 2 years now, because that's kind of what happens everywhere else that have 2 pretty good goalies. Igor Shesterkin, one of the best goalies on the planet was horrible in January. Horrible. So they're running Jonathan Quick up until the All-Star game. They give Shesterkin a week off, and now he's running with it. But here it doesn't happen that way, and that's where it makes it difficult to work in that three in a row because these goalies have just not allowed that to happen. So I'm curious if they just decide to do it, even though Jeremy Swayman's given up 5 goals in 2 straight games. Do they give him 3 starts in a row after the next one? Or can they finagle that? It's curious. It's hard.
It's going to be more difficult, the fact they have some back-to-backs too. So that kind of takes away the ability to pick your games. Like, you have a limited stretch that you can put someone in for a few games in a row, more than just the, 50-50 split because the schedule. But if we do start seeing that, and maybe it's a little bit of a tell for what they're planning to do. If we see them start going with one person over the other, but like you said, Ullmark might be playing the better hockey right now. It seems like he's been pretty comfortable after the trade deadline has come and gone. And it's hard to decide who starts the series again, because I know everybody thinks it's a predetermined thing that Swayman would be getting the chance this time around, but I don't think that that's been solidified at all so far. So there's still 13 games left to decide on that and to decide on the rotation. I wonder if there's a difference of opinion between Montgomery and goalie Bob Asenza on which one would like to go with, like, the classic stick with one goalie, and if the other one is more willing to try the rotation. That could also cause a little bit of a conflict in the decision-making before the playoffs and in the playoffs.
Yeah, and, I'm sure Don Sweeney will have a say on that as well, but ultimately it is final call is Montgomery's, mm-hmm. Obviously with a lot of input from goalie Bob. I think until maybe the last couple of weeks, you would have said Swayman's having the better season. This is kind of his year. He's the game one starter. I wonder if that is switching a little right now. Like, right now, today, Ullmark's the hotter hand, if we're just talking about the last week or so. Since the All-Star break, Swayman has a .902 save percentage. Ullmark's .910. Swayman has had a few of these 4 or 5 goal games, so I don't think that, Bridget, like you said, I don't think that's set in stone at all. Let's bring in Maria here, who has some thoughts on a goalie or maybe a question. Good morning, Maria. Happy St. Patrick's Day. Maria? All right, we'll try to circle back to Maria there. Okay.
Well, I actually had something to say too.
Okay.
Oh no, we lost Maria. Hopefully she calls back. So in terms of making the decision for, the rotation, and when you finally get to the playoffs, if Ullmark at some point either starts a series and gets hot and keeps the net, or like comes in, Swayman looks bad, comes in, and he just like takes the Bruins on this run for a Stanley Cup, can you imagine what people are going to say? Like, oh, I'm glad he said he wasn't going to go to LA. Like, I'm glad he like vetoed this trade, because at the end of the day, we don't know how it's going to play out and who they're going to need to ride. And they might need both guys, like we've talked about. So like, you could start to see a narrative form where it's like, okay, well, I'm really glad that trade didn't go through. If the rumors are true that Ullmark was like, nah, I'm going to stay here and maybe give himself a chance to win this.
Yeah. And that also leads to, if Ullmark is the game one starter or they rotate or whatever, that also leads to some other interesting discussions going forward about, like,
Swayman doesn't have a contract
yet. Right. Like, now what is Swayman's next contract? We thought this was maybe shaping up to be sort of his year. And obviously, if Ullmark got traded, it would have been would have had to have been. But now it's like, all right, you still have both. So Ullmark winning the game one start or even couple starts, like, that is absolutely still in play. Let's see. Do we have Maria now?
Hello.
Oh, we got
her. Hi, Maria.
Hey, good morning. Happy St. Patrick's Day. Sorry for the technical difficulties on this sleepy, rainy Sunday. my question, I have two questions. One related to the goalie rotation. how much of what happened last year against the Florida Panthers with the critiquing that was levied on both Monty and goalie Bob about, you know, moving away from the rotation, how much of that may factor into this? Because, you know, in my heart of hearts, I don't believe that he's going to go with a rotation just because there's so much pressure and noise about, you know, riding the hot hand and sticking with tradition and, you know, all of that stuff. So if you were the coaches, what would you guys do? And Bridget, I'm curious on your thoughts on this also. And Bridget, I also wanted to tell you that your take on the last episode of the Skate Pod with Lorai and Shattenkirk playing together, I totally agree with you. That was a mess. That was a mess, and I don't think they can repeat it. And then on the blown call against the Blues, when is the league going to be held accountable for providing people with an explanation? I don't need a dissertation, but if you're going to take 5 minutes to look at iPads and call Toronto and talk, can you give us a little bit of insight on why you made that ruling? That's all. It must be so maddening for all of you in the media as well, not to know and not be able to tell those of us that listen to you and read you why that call was made in the manner in which it was made. So thank you for the time.
Yes, thank you, Maria.
Enjoy the rest of your St. Patrick's Day. I want to start with the officiating thing. So I was telling Scott this, like, as we were talking about it during the St. Louis game. It's those kind of calls that, as a broadcaster, makes me look stupid.
Let's just refresh for people who might not remember what Maria's talking about. So in the St. Louis game on Monday, Bruins goal by Justin Brezzo got called back for offsides. It looked like Torrey Krug brought the puck back into his own zone, which would have negated it. Montgomery said the refs told him that it was a battle play, not a possession play. The ref in the arena couldn't hear anything because his mic didn't work. The NHL explanation that they send out through NHL PR didn't mention anything about Krug. So, yes, the communication was a mess, and no one really knew why that goal was taken back.
Yeah, and when I'm on TV broadcasting, like, a college hockey game, a PWHL game, and I'm trying to analyze it, like, during the review, talking about what we think is going to happen, it's those kind of calls that make us look dumb because we're, like, explaining it the way that we know the rule, right? And that, like, Krug brought it back in his own zone. So, like, it should be a good goal. And then they go the opposite way. And it's a disconnect that either makes the broadcasters look dumb or the league look dumb or both. Or, you know, like, it's just not a good situation. And to speak to the college hockey side of things, we're actually setting up a meeting to talk to Brian Murphy, who is a lead official of Hockey East, so that we can go through some of the calls and what they're looking for and what we should say during different reviews. And we've done it in the past, and it's been helpful. And I feel like maybe even if it's just a random day in the summer, people can jump on a Zoom call and ask questions about specific calls or just, like, the general nature of a rule and what we should be looking for and you know, what our understanding should be. They should just let people have at it for, like, one Zoom call. Let people air stuff out. It doesn't have to be us in particular, but maybe the, like, at a higher level, pick a few different markets reporters and just let them take over and ask a few questions.
Yeah, and that one was, like I say, it was especially frustrating because you couldn't hear what the ref was saying on the mic because it wasn't working, which, Razor, I think you said this, I think I heard you say it on Morning Brew, maybe it was Nesson post game, like, figure out the mic first. Like, don't just blow past it and be like, oh, well, I tried. Like, no, figure it out so that people know what you're saying.
That's my biggest pet peeve of all of this, because the other stuff, like the call, like having a is a little more difficult. The easiest thing in the world and the easiest way to help this is make the refs put their mics on. Every other league does it. The NFL does it 30 times a game, 25 times a game. We hear from the referee and he puts his mic on. If he doesn't, he fixes it and gets it right, and it takes 3 extra seconds. But for whatever reason, these NHL refs, there's no accountability on it. They're embarrassed to talk or like take a public speaking class. If you're going to be an NHL ref, it's part of the gig. It has to happen. It has to be this way. And if you get your mic and it doesn't go, someone in the box has got to tell you, like, put your mic on, get it right. Tell everybody what you're doing rather than doing it. They do it. They don't, they talk through it and then they realize the mic didn't work and then they just skate off and everyone's sitting there holding their beers. Like, what just happened? What was that? Because if we get a little bit from them, we can all discern what he meant. But if you don't hear anything, like it's a $7 billion business. Put the mic on and get it right. That's kind of where it starts and ends for me. The referees have to explain it. We just sat there, like Maria said, for 5 minutes. What's another 45 seconds to wait to get the mic turned on properly and for him to explain why it wasn't a goal? So in arenas, brutal.
Yeah, maybe give a second ref a mic too, just in case that one doesn't work, and have him explain. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
and also just grab the mic out. Like, there's a million things. Like, you can't say it's technology because if it's on the hip, okay, that doesn't work. Grab the mic. You're sitting beside the iPad, beside the microphone for the scoreboard right there. Just grab the mic right beside there and talk into it. That, like, there's a million different ways that they can make it easier than what it is right now.
And
right,
also, like to know the internal process of, like, disciplining a bad call. Or, like, say you make a really bad call, you missed a penalty, hit to the head, you didn't call it. Is there, like, an internal review where you get sent, like, five videos? These are all hits to the head that you, like, this is what we're looking for?
The way to track that is you have to do all 82 games and then see who doesn't get the playoff list.
Yeah.
It's all based on playoffs. So you don't see, if you really wanted to dig in, you see how many playoff games a ref has done compared to their regular season games, and you basically see what the league thinks of them. There's a few guys that have ref like 900 games, and they have no playoff games. If you want to look that up, I'm not going to out those guys.
I think you have a list in your head.
I have one guy in particular that sucks, and I love it every year. He never gets the playoffs.
In that case, the NHL puts out an official press release explaining the review, but really, like, all they do is they just quote the rule.
Yeah, that's it.
And it's like, everyone's question is, like, did Tory Krug bring the puck back in? And they don't even mention that. And
this week was a joke because they literally cut and paste from, like, 18.1.5.7 of the rule book. Like, I don't want to read the rule book. I want, like, layman's terms. Like, give it to me straight.
Yeah. Let's address another part of Maria's call. So what would we do? Now, I'm the one who's been pro-rotation. I remain that right now. I think Allmark's been playing a little better. I don't know that either one's separated to the point where I'm going to sit here and say, like, I want to ride that guy. As it is right now, I would continue the rotation until one of them gives me a reason not to, and that's regular season and playoffs. If, if Swayman has another tough game his next game, and I do want to get, maybe not this segment because we're wrapping up, but raise his thoughts on whether last night qualifies as a tough game for Swayman. Should there, were there a couple goals that he wants back? But right now, I'm still in the camp of I would continue the rotation until one of them gives, has a bad game in the playoffs or a couple bad games in the regular season and gives me a reason not to go back to them right away.
Yeah, well, my thought is just look at the first three games of a series. I want both guys to get in at some point in the first three games. Just so that they're not coming in game seven and it's their first game if they have takeover then, right? So give each guy at least one shot in net for the first three games and just go from there. Make your decision from there. Did Allmark play two great games? Swayman play one mediocre game? Go back to Allmark? Like, I want to see each of them get in early and then decide from there based off what you're seeing.
Razor, where are you at right now?
I'm not a rotation. I'll never be a rotation guy. So I am not. I am not against seeing both goaltenders. I wish it was as easy as to say that each game is comparable and each goal is comparable and you could say game one is going to be exactly like game two and we can see exactly how each other play and base it off that and not who's game three. I get concerned. This is how I've explained it, is someone winning 7-5, someone losing 1-0 and having to figure out who should play game three. That makes it really, really difficult.
There's definitely some internal metrics that you can look at besides.
No. Don't say metrics.
Besides metrics. No. I mean, just besides the score, right? We're not talking about the guy that gets a win and the guy that gets a loss, right? We're talking about what you see, what your analysis of the guy was during the game.
I know, but it's about winning.
Yes,
and you want
is.
The winner. Do you want Grant Fuhr or do you want the guy?
If Swayman lost 1-0,
yeah,
in a tight game,
yeah,
like
and
I
he
would...
gave, so this well, is, the, I'll give you the metric. The, you know, throw the metrics out. Jeremy Swayman, and I don't, you know, I'm not even going to use their names because it's not fair because it'll be taken out of context somehow, some way. One goalie goes in and makes 44 saves, but gives up a goal from the red line in overtime to lose 1-0. The next guy goes in and gives up 5, but wins 6-5 and makes a breakaway save in overtime. And then they go down the other way and score. But he gave up 5-on-25. Who plays game 3?
I know Scott's answer. Rotate.
I'd rotate. So you're talking about one soft goal that guy gave up, right?
In overtime. Like Linus Ullmark has been criticized for in game 5. And that was the reason they should have rotated, even though he played great the 2 games before.
Well, to me, that wasn't calling for a rotation. That was, he's played 5 games, and at that point in the series, I think had been off for 2 of them. To me, that was, all right, you got your one chance to bounce back. You did. Now you've had, you know,
but let's just stay in this scenario. Let's not talk about last year. I just brought that up just because that's the soft goal. Someone gives up a soft goal to lose the game. The other guy gives up more goals but makes huge saves to close out the game. Even better, you're the closeout situation.
So
who do we go to next?
I rotate. I'm not ending the rotation based on a soft goal.
Based on 2 games.
Sure.
Okay.
But I know we're like speaking mostly in hypotheticals, and we have no idea what's going to happen. But the reason why I say what I think they should do in the first 3 games is because, first of all, you don't want to bring a guy in at the end of the series. You want to get both going, right? You want to give guys time to acclimate to the playoffs, right? And you don't want to let somebody carry the entire load themselves. I know that's
in the past,
but it looked like that they could have used a little bit of that last year.
I hear all that, but it can't be 3 games. It's because if it's a real rotation, it has to be 4.
Yeah.
So then you're doing 4 games. You could be down 3-1 because one goalie's playing badly and you didn't play the other guy. You can imagine the criticism that
decision
relates to, and how annoyed you would be as a fan when you can clearly see one of the goalies is not playing very good and the other guy was unbelievable, but you played them both the same through 4 games and you're down 3-1 coming home against Toronto.
Okay, we got to catch a break here, but I have more thoughts on this on the other side.
Well, no, but we need my trivia, okay? I have a trivia question.
We will also get to Bridges trivia. You can call in 617-779-7937. We got to get this break and we'll be right back.
Non-stop hockey talk. It's Sunday Skate on Boston Sports Original, WEEI.
Welcome back to Sunday Skate. With Andrew Raycroft and Bridget Prue, I'm Scott McLaughlin. We still have a goalie debate ongoing here. But
it did
Bridget,
continue in the break, by the way.
Yeah. Bridget wants to break it up with a little bit more fun, though.
Yeah,
What do you got, Bridget?
Because it does seem that we may never come to an agreement about the goalie thing.
Yeah.
I don't think we're going to. So I think we have 3 separate opinions about it. But anyway, so yeah, let's break it up with some Bruins St. Patrick's Day trivia. It's pretty simple. There is a current Bruin who was born on St. Patrick's Day. And there is one former Bruin that I found that was born on St. Patrick's Day. I am going to let you guys guess first without, do not look it up, Razor, off the internet.
No, I'm on it, but I'm not on that. I'm not going to.
So there is a current Bruins player that's birthday is today. If you guys don't know it, I will give you the first hint. It
should be Charlie McAvoy, right?
Well, I do have some, I do have some hints if you guys don't know.
I know Charlie Coyle's a March birthday, but he just had his, so it's not him.
Okay. Let me hit you with one of my hints. So this is a player who was drafted in the 2016 NHL entry draft.
Trent Frederick.
It is not Trent Frederick. Do we need another hint?
Andrew Peak, was he 2016?
Oh my God, you guessed it so fast. Okay.
Good. Well done.
That was pretty good. Okay, I had a lot more hints here. It was, you know, he played college at Notre Dame. He was drafted by Columbus. He was not on the Bruins for last year's collapse in the playoffs. But yes, his birthday is today. So happy birthday to new Bruin Andrew Peak. And there is one former Bruins player born on St. Patrick's Day who played in the 2011 Stanley Cup playoffs for the Bruins. I'm guessing you guys need more of a hint than that.
No, Scott's going to get it right.
Tomas Cabrera.
No.
I was thinking that too. That's who I would have picked too. It sounded like she went like the one of the obscure players.
No, he is also one of on Boston's 100 legendary players list.
Krejci?
It's not Krejci.
Sean Thornton?
No. I am afraid that this next one is completely going to give it away. He was once fined $2,500 for giving Habs fans the middle finger in a playoff series.
Yeah.
Yeah, that gave it away.
That'll be Andrew Ferentz.
Yes, that is Andrew Ferentz. I really just wanted to bring that little piece of information back up. But yes, so it is Andrew Peak and Andrew Ferentz. Happy birthday to both of them. Just some stupid trivia. But hopefully they have a good day today.
Fitting then that Peak played at Notre Dame.
Yes, that's right. That's what I was saying. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. The connection is made.
All right. How about then before we get back into our goalie argument, let's talk about Andrew Peak, who's now played two games since coming home from the deadline. And I would say has looked pretty good. You know, a player who everything we heard, everything you saw, if you looked at the analytics, was, boy, he was really having a tough go of it in Columbus. He getting healthy scratched, his minutes were way down, analytics even compared to his teammates were bad. They said like he wasn't even keeping guys away from the net front. It's why I had questions about that trade. I don't want to say, you know, the Bruins totally fixed him in 1 week, like that's probably a little bit of an exaggeration, but he's played really well these two games. Like I think you're looking at a guy who, you know, right now would be in the playoff lineup, and you see what he can bring.
No, he's an NHL defenseman. There's no question. You watch him skate and move, and the size and the length of him. He's certainly an NHL player. You certainly have to question what's going on in Columbus when you watch that and think that the guy can't get in the lineup. It's not all NHL teams are created equal. Not all NHL organizations are created equal, and that. Certainly after two games, that's my thought as well, is how they didn't help this kid. I think the Bruins system always helps a defenseman like him who can learn how to keep it simple and just play a game and move it around. So I've really liked how the defense looked last night. I just that seems to line up as best right now. If I'm starting game one, that's what I'm rolling with, are those six guys. I think he can get better. There was a bad pinch in the second period. Brick alluded to it on the telecast, where that's an easy one, and I'm sure they've looked at that either already or are doing so right about
probably
now.
Probably gave him the iPad on the bench.
Right about now, saying, all right, this is what we don't do here. You're gonna hold the blue line a little bit better there. So those things will come up, those things will get better, but he moves real well and he's going to help this team for sure.
And so far, so good with the chemistry with the, like, Weatherspoon.
He just plays with everybody so easily. That's such a great, I mean, that's why he got another deal, but what a great skill for a guy like that. And I think you get that from playing in the minors for that long. You have so many different partners and so many different people. Weatherspoon's game doesn't change whether he's on the left or the right or who he's playing. McAvoy, Peak, Lindholm, it doesn't matter who he's playing with. So sorry to interrupt, but that's all Parker Weatherspoon's ability to do that. It's very good.
Yeah, absolutely. And so that means that the odd guys out are Lauri and Chatenkirk at this point, unless you want to switch Lauri in for a Lauri McAvoy pair every once in a while. But Grizzlick, I think he's playing fine there. So I'm not one of the Grizzlick haters. So I'm sure you can argue for Lauri and whatnot, but I think Grizzlick for the playoffs has more experience, and I'm fine with him sticking with McAvoy for that. I like Peak. We talked to him before the Montreal game, and he seemed very refreshed and excited to be here, get a change of scenery, hopefully be more understood by this new organization. It feels like he finally feels like he's getting a a fair chance. And if he keeps playing like he has been, then he's going to get that. And he played a little bit more time on the penalty kill in the second game than in that first game in Montreal, where they were kind of still waiting for him to probably have a little bit more time to practice the systems of the PK. And if they can use him consistently on the penalty kill and he can do what he's been doing 5-on-5, I like the fit.
Yeah, he's going to be the happiest guy in the world, not just because it's his birthday, but you go from a terrible Columbus team that's not even using you to the top team in the standings, you know, putting you in into a regular spot and wanting to get you ready to be, it seems like, an everyday player in the playoffs. I really like that third pairing too, Weatherspoon, Peak. That's like rock solid, you know, defensively smart guys, can both help on the penalty kill. I do have some thoughts on, you know, Grizzly versus Lauri, best partner for McAvoy right now, that we can throw that as a topic on the table. We still get the goalies on there. We got
calls.
Closing
We're
out
definitely
games.
Gonna get to these calls.
Yeah,
next
we got
segment.
Some calls. So hour two of Sunday Skate coming up. Join in 617-779-7937. You can text us 37937. We'll be back after this break.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.